Okay, ladies, why is skincare so confusing? I feel like I've used a hodgepodge of whatever the so-called latest and greatest products are, or just whatever my friends were loving at the time. Until I discovered Barefaced. I first started following Barefaced on Instagram, and I've learned so much. The company was founded by a nurse practitioner who is passionate about providing simple, science-backed education, but she also shares valuable insight on both life and business and is a mama of four, and you know we love that. What's really unique and helpful is their team of skincare specialists that you can text for complimentary consults and to answer any skin questions. It's like getting a professional recommendation from the comfort of your couch. This is how I know exactly what to use for my skin type. You can text them too. Their number is on their Barefaced Instagram, and I'll put the number in the show notes as well. The most important thing is to understand your unique skin type, and the Barefaced Skin Quiz makes it easy to figure out in just 5 minutes. Head over to their Instagram at Barefaced to take the skin quiz and to find a wealth of information on all things skincare. Hey, here's the best part. Got It From My Mama podcast listeners can get 15% off their first purchase by using code MAMA15. Welcome back to the podcast. Becky Harris is a go-getter. As a single mom, she raised two kids, one of whom has had tremendous success in country music. Chris Young has more than a dozen number ones since winning Nashville Star 16 years ago. Becky is a respected music business manager, a cookbook author, a competitive ballroom dancer, and as you'll hear, a great storyteller. Enjoy this episode with RCA recording artist Chris Young's Mama. When we talk about male voices in country music, I just don't think it gets any better than Chris Young. That voice is something else, and I know Mama has to agree with that.
Well, he didn't get it from me. I can't sing at all.
I can't either.
Got it from my dad.
Okay.
And yes, he has an amazing voice, but most people don't realize he's classically trained.
No.
He got offered a full ride to Berklee School of Music when he was in high school. He turned it down. He wanted to sing country. MTSU originally offered him a full ride. He turned it down. He wanted to go to Belmont. He went to Belmont for a year and a half, went to MTSU for a semester before he took a six-month break. That was, well, let's see, he's 37, and that's when he was 19. So he's still taking a break.
He's still on that gap year. I know about that. Oh, that's funny. Wow. So the music came from your dad, and your dad was part of the Louisiana Hayride, which there's so much rich history there.
He was on it a couple of times as a kid.
Okay.
But my dad was self-taught. He played by ear. He still plays. Daddy's 90 years old. He still plays and sings, but he's got dementia now, and so he's forgetting some things, but he can play the piano and the guitar.
Oh, wow. So Chris did kind of grow up at least exposed to music a little bit.
First thing he ever learned to play on the guitar was Marty Robbins.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so he grew up on the good stuff.
Yeah.
Or what you and I would probably call the good stuff, right? So part of Chris's story, though, I mean, you really didn't know that the child was as talented as he was when he was a youngster, right?
No. So Chris talked early. Chris talked at 4 months.
What?
Yes.
4 months?
The doctor didn't believe me. We went to the doctor, and he said, he's not talking. What's your cat's name? And he goes, Atches. He couldn't say P, but he... Atches. He goes, who's this? And he said, Mama.
Like clearly. Mama at 4 months old.
So, and he could read when he was 4 years old. I have a picture of him somewhere that I'm sure he will not let me share of him sitting in the bathroom reading People magazine out loud.
Oh my goodness. That's awesome. I bet you flash back to that moment the first time you ever saw him in People magazine too.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty special.
He, early on read, talked, did all the things. We found out when he was in kindergarten, he was ADHD, and back then they put him on Ritalin. That was the only medication you could give him. Well, what they don't tell you or didn't tell us is that it can stunt their growth. So Chris is 6'4" and a half, but he was supposed to be 6'8".
What? Oh my goodness. I was going to say stunt their growth. He is a big dude.
So when he was in the fourth grade, they told us he hadn't grown at all in 2 years. And so it panicked us because it had stunted his growth and we didn't want him to be, you know, 4 foot tall forever. So we took him off the Ritalin, and that's when I found out he could sing, because they wanted us to put him in all kinds of extracurricular activities to wear off some of the energy. Well, we put him in sports and he would figure everybody's batting average in his head. The coach wouldn't let him play. Chris wore Coke bottle glasses. Like, there was a lot going on there.
Oh my.
And so, and part of it we found out because his growth was stunted, he was uncoordinated when he started to grow again. So he kind of ran like Jerry Lewis for that summer.
Oh, now, my goodness. I've got a visual.
If you saw him now playing basketball or any of the sports that he does,
yeah,
you'd be like, what? But it was because he grew so fast after not growing. So yeah, it caused him to be uncoordinated for a couple of years.
That makes sense. Yeah, I've heard a lot of people refer to it as like kind of going through this giraffe stage where you're just like limbs. And
so in the process of testing him, we found out that he had a genius IQ. He passed the ACT test with a 19, which was a score high enough to get into college in the fourth grade. I put him into children's theater. Well, he started acting. He loved it. And they asked him to be part of a kid's song and dance group. And I said, well, he can't sing. They're like, yeah, but he dances. We'll put him in the back. Nobody will ever know. He got the only solo, and that's when he started singing.
So that first time you kind of heard that voice in a performance state, not like just singing around the house or whatever. Did you know then, like, this is special. This is not the average child singing on that stage.
I grew up in Nashville. I didn't want him to have anything to do with the music business.
Mm.
My dad discouraged him. My dad thinks he encouraged him, but he didn't. He discouraged him from doing this. But then as he started to get more and more into theater and music, I was letting him do this. I mean, he was doing television early on. Mm. People don't realize he was on multiple kids' shows growing up.
Oh.
He did a show on, which is now Nick Jr., but at that time it was called something else, called Walk in Your Shoes, where you swapped lives for the day. So it's right after 9/11. I get this phone call from a booking agent in New York. I didn't believe it was real. I made them call, let me call them back to see what they would answer. Looked up the phone number. Yeah. They're like, so we understand your son is a country artist and he has his own band. Well, he did.
How old was he at the time?
He was 15.
Okay.
So he did have his own band, but his band was like my age.
Oh.
And they would play different fairs and festivals. I mean, some of them were younger. Some of them were in their 30s, but it's like they were not high school kids.
Yeah, it was still a teenager with adults. Yeah.
So they said, we want you to do a video. And I mean, this is back when it's VHS tapes, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want you to do a video and overnight it to us. And so I called Chris and I'm like, hey, bring a couple of your buddies home from school that play. We need to do a video. So he literally brought home a guy that he knew from Winter Drumline, because Chris sang for the Winter Drumline that year.
He wasn't in the band,
no,
but he sang
for them.
They
asked him to sing.
Okay.
He was first chair All-State, first chair Mid-State, all this stuff. We just let him do anything that he wanted to do that was musical or singing, or like he starred in the high school plays. He did local theater. He did all this stuff growing up. Anyway, he brings home these two kids. One of them's a guy from his math class that said he could play guitar. And the other one was the drummer from the Winter Drumline. And they're like, we need to make a video. So these guys like learned two songs and we videoed it in like 2 hours one night. And it was pretty awful, but I sent it. Well, Chris was a half-timer. The dancers that come out on the basketball court.
Oh, yeah.
He was like a half-timer. He did break dancing.
In high school?
In high school.
He was a break dancer?
He used to break dance on Second Avenue.
Oh, my goodness.
And he made as much in tips break dancing as he did one year during CMA Fest singing.
Well, there's a fun fact. Wow.
He was about 16 that year.
Okay.
He'd come home, he'd play during the day. I'd book him to play in those little bars up and down Broadway.
Yep.
And he'd play for tips, and then he'd come home, change his clothes, and go back and breakdance at night. And people didn't even realize it was the same guy.
Wow. So he was playing in bars on Broadway when he was like 16, 17 years old?
Yes.
Just do cover songs and with the guitar kind of thing?
Cover songs, and he'd throw in some of his originals every now and then.
So he was writing at that age?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He started writing when he was about 14. First song he ever wrote was a love song about a Camaro.
Did he have a Camaro?
He did. His very first car was a Camaro.
So that was his first
Camaro.
Love.
That was his first love. And he and his dad were fixing it up and he had a wreck.
Oh.
So that's the first time he ever wrecked a car. A guy, we were coming home. He had played Tin Pan South. And we were coming home. And of course, Chris didn't have any gas in his car. He never did when he was 16. Mm-hmm. I gave him $20 and told him to fill his car up, which would have filled it up. He didn't. He put $10 worth of gas in it and it saved his life. So we were in dead still traffic on the interstate. I was in front of him. I just called my husband to say, hey, we're going to be late. We were at the 24-40 split right there where the left goes over the Silliman Evans Bridge. I think now it's 65, but back then it was 24-40.
Mm-hmm.
And if you went to the right, you went toward Murfreesboro.
Mm-hmm.
So dead stop traffic. I stopped. I looked into my rearview mirror to make sure Chris stopped, called my husband and said, we're going to be late. Just in time to see this guy come up over the hill and hit Chris doing 75 miles an hour, never braked anything, drove into his car, drove his car into mine.
So you saw the accident and were a part of the accident.
Yes. I threw my phone. My husband heard it, didn't know what was going on. I got Chris out of the car, climbed through the window. His gas tank was sitting in the passenger seat. If he had filled his car up, it would have exploded.
Oh, wow.
So he had 13 stitches up the back of his head. He lost his audition tape for the Grammy Choir. He re-sang it with a concussion. And that year, he was the only baritone. They only picked six people to be in the Grammy Choir. And he was the only baritone in the Grammy Choir. Oh, and they were on the CBS Early Show.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, he's done TV a lot of things from the time he was
national
like 11.
Exposure. Yeah. So I'm going to guess that by the time we get to him, he's what, 2021 when he auditions for Nashville Star, or was he older?
So he was 20.
20.
He had turned it down several times. Tracy Gershon still gives me crap about that. And they had asked us for a couple of years for him to come audition, and he wouldn't do it. Well, Billy Block, who used to do a radio show here in Nashville, was a big advocate of Chris. And Chris had been on Billy's show many, many, many times. Chris had already moved to Texas. He was fronting the house band at Cowboys. And by the way, Cowboys did not know he was not 21 years old.
Oh, they playing in a lot of bars before he was 21 years old.
And most people didn't ask because he was tall. At that point, he was already 6'4", and looked older, and he had a deep voice, so they didn't question it, right?
So he actually moved to Texas to go front that house band.
He did.
Was that a big thing for you, Mama, to see him, you know, he's not even old enough to be in the bar, he's going to go there and move. Oh.
I was furious. And so and also, I was already working in the music business, and I knew what the people on Broadway made, which is nothing. So he called me, and he goes, hey, they want me to come down here and front the house band. I said, what about college? I'm going to take 6 months off. I said, great. You're going to take 6 months off. Yeah. I said, I don't think that's a good idea. He goes, well, I promise I'm only going to take 6 months off. Okay. He goes, how much do I have to make to move down here? And I said, $1,000 a week. Because in Nashville, if you walked into a bar and said, I need $1,000 a week, they would laugh you right on out the door.
For sure.
I mean, most of those guys are lucky if they pay them $50 a night plus tips.
Yeah, plus tips.
So he called me back a few minutes later. He goes, okay, they want me down here a week from Monday.
They were going to give him $1,000. Wow.
Well, I didn't know until 2 years ago. He was making $700 a week to front the house band. But on Sunday night, they had hip hop night, and he was working as a bouncer for the other $300. I wanted to kill him. Wow. The first thing he ever did to make money, he was in a Toyota commercial.
Really?
When he was like 10 with his stepdad, his dad.
Mm-hmm. Can we find that somewhere, that commercial?
I doubt it. We've looked for it and looked for it. It was a regional commercial, and they ran it up north, but they filmed it at Percy Priest Lake.
Oh, okay.
So, and I think he got paid maybe $50 for that. And then they cast him the next year in a Reba McEntire video, which you can find. And he was going to make $500 to be the brother, and he got there, and they're like, oh, he was going to be the boyfriend. That's what it was. He got there, and they're like, yeah, he doesn't really look like a boyfriend. We'll let him be the brother. And he goes, do I still make $500? And they said, yeah.
Good for him.
So he's the brother in a Reba video.
Okay.
And the next year, they cast him in a Buddy Jewel, Sweet Southern Comfort, and he was the love interest sitting on the front porch.
Ah, another Nashville star and alum, Buddy Jewel.
So he met Buddy when Buddy was playing at El Chico's on Murfreesboro Road. When Buddy left, Chris went and asked him when they hire him. He was 15, and he turned 16 that summer, but this was in June. So he was 15 for the first couple of weeks we had to take him. They paid him $50 to play for 4 hours on the patio and all the food that he wanted to eat. Well, he was 15, so he thought that was fantastic, right?
Probably sounded great to him.
So he played El Chico's. The next year, they gave him a raise to $100 for 4 hours and tips.
Doubled his money.
So he played that. One night, this guy ran off. Chris has tried to die multiple times. Like, we make a joke out of it, but like, the first time he ever had that wreck, he had 13 stitches up the back of his neck, went all the way to the skull.
Wow.
He's very lucky to live through that or not be, have any kind of, he was fine. So this guy, we're sitting there watching him. Chris has his brand new guitar that he had spent all of his graduation money on. He's sitting there playing this guitar that he was like his baby. This guy has a wreck, comes off Murfreesboro Road, runs straight up the back of the fence that's like right up against Chris's back and hits the side of the building. The guy gets out and starts running. Chris stands up and he goes, we're all going to need to go that way. Super calm. That he just hit the gas main, unplugs his guitar. Thankfully, it did not spark because it would have blown us up. Whoa. We walk down the block. I'm still shaking. The news media shows up. I look over. He's standing there. He goes, "Hi, my name's Chris Young. I was just sitting here on the patio at El Chico's on Murfreesboro Road playing my guitar like I do every night. Every Saturday night, you can find me here from 7 to 9. Come by and see me." But like I said, I'm Chris Young. I was on the patio at El Chico's. This guy has a wreck, and he's like doing a public service announcement, and I'm shaking. Like, I'm just glad he's alive.
Who needs a publicist? Oh, my goodness.
And he comes over and he goes, "Aren't you glad I said my name like a whole bunch of times? I don't think they can edit it out."
Not if you put it in pretty much every other word. Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. I love that story. Wow. So
fast forward, he calls me a couple of years ago. He's on tour with Brad Paisley. "Mom, I'm in the hospital. Don't panic. They took me off the plane. My organs were starting to shut down. Apparently, I have some sort of infection." And, of course, I immediately got on a plane and flew to Denver.
So he left traveling not knowing that he was...
I took him to the airport. I said, "Your face looks funny." He goes, he had no idea. So you know how people always tell you if an infection goes in instead of out and you don't see it, it's worse. And he was septic.
Oh, that's dangerous.
So that's out there in the public. And then a couple of years after that, he nearly cut his hand off one night because he bobbled a knife cutting an apple in his apartment, and it cut all the way to the bone on these two fingers, and it cut here. So this cut an artery, this cut artery.
With a kitchen knife?
Well, so he had this really super sharp knife, and he was trying to be all fancy and slice this apple. And he dropped it and went to catch it because he goes, "It's going to hit my toe. It's going to cut my toe off." And he grabbed for it and got the blade instead of the handle of the knife.
Oh, okay. So almost like he squeezed the blade in it.
So he was supposed to pay CMA Fest, the main stage, the next night and couldn't do it. He had 2 4-hour surgeries on his hand. They told him he'd never get the whole use of his hand back, and he's got 99% of it.
Oh, good. So, but for a while, I guess it affected the guitar and everything.
Well, but playing the guitar is what helped him get all the use of his hand.
Oh,
the strength.
Oh, wow.
But he's got an odd scar on his hand. So if you ever see like his. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Rough. Oh, my goodness. He has. He's like the cat with 9 lives.
9 lives.
So were you encouraging him? I mean, obviously you have a very significant voice in his life. Were you encouraging him to do the Nashville Star thing, or were you hesitant?
Everybody in Nashville had turned Chris down at this point.
So he had been shopping deals and all that.
He had been shopping. Okay. And he got turned down. I had already gone to work in the music business. Mm-hmm. And Billy Block called me and he goes, "Please get him to do this." And I'm like, "Billy, he's not going to want to miss a night of work." He goes, "He can audition in Houston. There's this flight. He can take a flight from Dallas to Houston, audition, and be back in time to be on stage at 9 o'clock when he starts playing." So I called Chris and I said, "I think you should do it. Billy's been really good to you. And the label this year is RCA. You've always wanted to be on RCA. It might work out."
Meaning that the winner that year of Nashville Star was going to receive a record deal with RCA.
Yes.
Okay.
So he was like, "Okay, I'll do it." So he calls me. He's madder than an old wet hen because he's not 25. He's not old enough to rent a car. He gets there. He has to take a cab from the airport because this is pre-Uber.
Yeah.
Has to take a cab from the airport to the audition. He goes, "Mom, that cab ride was $100. Okay, we'll just do the audition. Calls me when he's leaving. He goes, "I'm going to make it back to the airport." He goes, "But that's the worst audition I've ever done. There's no way they're going to cast me on that show."
Oh,
I said, "Okay, great. You did Billy a favor." He goes to be... Chris was a presidential scholar in the arts, which is another thing. People don't know what that is. This is a national program through the president of the United States. Lyndon B. Johnson started it.
Got it. Okay.
And it's the cream of the crop of high school students across the country. And there's 300 of them every year. Mm-hmm. So Chris agreed to go back and be a camp counselor for the students after the fact, right? So he goes back because he's given back to the program that he came through. And Nashville Star starts calling me. "We need to speak with Chris." And I'm like, "Well, good news." Like Chris always did. They used to call him the phone murderer at Verizon. He has killed his phone when he gets to Washington. So he doesn't have a phone that he can, his cell phone's dead.
Okay.
They start calling me and they're calling me. They call me for 48 hours and they're like, "We have to speak with him." And I'm like, "Okay, are you calling to tell him he's not on the show? Because he's in Washington, D.C. as a camp counselor and he's broken his phone and he can't talk to you."
Yeah.
They're like, "We don't call to tell you that you're not on the show." And I said, "Okay, well, then here's the deal.
If you're not using the Core 4 products for long-term skin health, you're likely very underwhelmed by the results of your skincare routine. Think of building your skincare routine like building a house. You need a solid foundation, otherwise your house will collapse. The same thing applies to your skin. If you're not using the Core 4, your skin lacks the resources to be healthy. So what are the Core 4 products? A vitamin C, SPF, an exfoliant, and a retinoid. These four products protect, repair, and strengthen the skin, and they are the first four products that are really worth investing in because they are the powerhouse of your routine. Bare Faced makes it easy to get started with these four essentials with their Bare Necessities Bundle. This bundle can be customized to your skin type when you take the 5-minute skin quiz on barefaced.com. They even break down exactly how to use each product and how to introduce them into your routine. Super simple and effective. Hey, got it from my mama listeners. Get a discount code. Use MAMA15 to get 15% off your first Bare Faced purchase.
And I said, okay, well, then here's the deal. He'll do it, but he can't call you back for 48 more hours because he won't be back from Washington until then. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, well, we need him to report on this date. So he gets back to Nashville. He's going to go back to Dallas to work. And I tell him he's on the show and he goes, I cannot believe you did not ask me about that. And I'm like, okay, well, let's talk about this for a second. You said you wanted to do it. Billy wants you to do it. The worst thing that can happen is you get a record deal. I said,
yeah,
you might not make it through the first week.
No risk.
So he goes back to Texas. He has to be back in 2 weeks. I send his sister down there because I knew he wouldn't pack anything up and he didn't. So they packed everything in the back of his old Ford truck that he owned. The night before he left, it's in garbage bags. I mean, it's the biggest mess ever. I think half of it's still in a storage building somewhere. He never unpacked it.
Oh, my goodness.
They get back the day that he's supposed to report. And I looked at him and he's white as this. White as a sheet. I'm like, what is wrong with you? And he goes, I have walking pneumonia. I said, do not tell them on that show that you are sick.
Oh.
So he calls me 6 hours before the very first episode. Hey, I feel awful. I said, I'm going to have somebody come give you a steroid shot and a B12 shot. So we have a family doctor. Mm-hmm. They go give him the shots. He got up and sang that night. But then he got better every week. His voice got better every week. And they were like, oh, you're getting better every week. I'm like, yeah, because he's getting over walking pneumonia and he's not passing out better.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. So did you go every week for the show and the live taping? And
so because I've worked in the music business, mm-hmm. and we had had a couple of the previous winners. I actually worked for Brad Cotter while Chris was on the show.
Oh, okay.
And Brad Cotter had won 2 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew all about the process, and okay. we ran it like a presidential campaign. So he had had a fan club since he was 14.
Really?
And the fan club president was from Alabama, and she would come up every week, and we would like tailgate in the parking lot, and we stacked the audience, which people didn't know. So after the first week, they pre-taped the audience sound, and they didn't run the real audience sound because it was so loud because we stacked the audience. Like,
it was all Chris Young fans.
It was all Chris Young fans.
Wow.
And so we had like poster making parties and all this stuff, and they would just go in there. Well, our plan was to do a Miranda, right? To come in second so that we could shop his deal and get what we wanted.
Mm.
We did not expect him to win.
Really? Who was it down to? Him and who?
Casey Rivers, I think was the other guy's name.
Okay.
And he ended up being a contemporary Christian act, I think. Casey was really good, and we expected Casey to win.
Yeah.
So I'm standing in the audience. I've got a manager already in place. We've already got a booking agent in place. I've got an attorney in place. And the manager was from New York. His name was Ron Shapiro, and he was managing Julie Roberts, who was another client of mine.
Okay.
Who's at Universal.
I remember Julie.
We were ready to pitch Chris the very next day. And when they announced him as the winner, I turned around to Ron, and I'm like, what do I do? And he goes, turn around and smile real big because the camera's right in your face. And I went, hi. He goes, act excited. Like, I was so excited. I was not excited.
But that
I did
was
not
how
was
you
happen.
Would have chosen that to go.
No, because I knew radio was not fond of Nashville Star. The mm-hmm. Nashville Star contract was not amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was tied to it until the last record that he just did.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So how many years was that? Or was
six
it is
album,
album deal?
Cycles.
It's a 6-album deal. Oh, my goodness. Wow. So you kind of had to navigate all that with him. But I want to go back to talk about Chris's childhood. because we've heard a lot about his personality and his interests and his talents and all of that. But as busy as he was and all the opportunities that he had, you were a single mom navigating all of that with two children or three?
So I have two.
Two. Okay.
I have a stepson. Yes.
Okay. Dot is my daughter. She's older?
No, she's younger. Okay. They're 13 months apart. I got pregnant on birth control back to back.
Oh, okay.
I was married the first time for 9 years. Mm-hmm. Husband came home out of the blue, didn't want to be married anymore, got a divorce.
Wow.
Now I've got two kids. I had a college degree, but my job, I made $12,480 a year.
So you were working at the time when your husband left?
Yes, I was working. Mm-hmm. I was an administrative assistant for an architect. But I had a great job, and I got off in time to go pick them up from school. And like, I let them do all the extracurricular activities that we could come up with. We mm-hmm. were constantly going somewhere. In fact, we used to go stand in line and get free radio tickets. So Starwood Amphitheater was the big amphitheater here back then.
Yeah.
Right after I had first started dating my husband now, mm-hmm. and Chris was nine, we stood in line and got free tickets to go see Vince Gill. And a new girl opened for him that night, Leanne Rimes.
Oh, my goodness.
So Chris turned around and looked at me as, I'm going to be on that stage one day. So when Chris played the amphitheater here, the new amphitheater on Second Avenue.
Ascend.
I just cried the whole time he was playing because it was like stepping back in time. I mean, Starwood's gone, so he couldn't play.
I was going to say, he probably never got the chance to play Starwood, right?
So people are like, what touches you the most? I said, it's when something happens that's like a throwback to the kid standing on the coffee table with the hairbrush.
Yep, yep.
And that's what that was.
Yeah.
He did a song with Vince a few years ago, Sober Saturday Night. That was a huge thing because Vince was like his big hero. Yeah,
that's probably one of the first big concerts he'd been to was to go see Vince Gill, too.
That was his first concert, period.
Oh, was it? Okay, ladies, why is skincare so confusing? I feel like I've used a hodgepodge of whatever the so-called latest and greatest products are, or just whatever my friends were loving at the time. Until I discovered Barefaced. I first started following Barefaced on Instagram, and I've learned so much. The company was founded by a nurse practitioner who is passionate about providing simple, science-backed education, but she also shares valuable insight on both life and business and is a mama of four, and you know we love that. What's really unique and helpful is their team of skincare specialists that you can text for complimentary consults and to answer any skin questions. It's like getting a professional recommendation from the comfort of your couch. This is how I know exactly what to use for my skin type. You can text them too. Their number is on their Barefaced Instagram, and I'll put the number in the show notes as well. The most important thing is to understand your unique skin type, and the Barefaced Skin Quiz makes it easy to figure out in just 5 minutes. Head over to their Instagram at Barefaced to take the skin quiz and to find a wealth of information on all things skincare. Hey, here's the best part. Got it from my mama. Podcast listeners can get 15% off their first purchase by using code MAMA15. You are raising these children on $12,000 a year, doing the best you can. You've got a job. How bad did things get?
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
My parents never knew. My parents would have helped me, but I was very proud, and so I wouldn't tell. Mm-hmm. At one point, it was a Thursday, and I got paid the next day, and Chris and Dot came in after dinner, and they wanted something sweet. And Chris told Country Weekly this story, and I was just mortified when it first came out because, you know, he was first getting started. He goes, the coolest thing my mom ever did one night, we didn't have any food, and she let us roast mini marshmallows on toothpicks over a candle.
Wow.
That's the only thing I had in the cabinet. Mm-hmm. And they thought it was the coolest thing that ever happened.
It's a kid's perspective, though, of what you were probably like. You felt almost shame of, this is all I have to give you.
Yeah.
But it's one of his sweetest memories.
But they thought it was the coolest things ever.
Yeah.
And so I was sewing and typing papers at night. I had a full-time job in the daytime.
Money. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They would go to bed at night, and I would make clothes for people because I had a children's store before I got my divorce.
Oh, okay.
So it's like I could sew, and I made extra money doing that. Mm-hmm. They never knew we were broke.
They wouldn't even describe their childhood that way.
No. They didn't know we were broke until they were grown and probably almost 30. One day, Chris looked at me and he goes, we were totally broke. And I'm like, yeah.
Yes, we were.
But because I didn't have any money, I had to learn to cook and nothing went to waste. So if I made something and it didn't taste good, I had to fix it.
Yeah. You couldn't just dump it and start over.
No. Mm-hmm. So I knew how to make basic stuff, but I actually learned to cook during that time.
Yeah.
And I could take $30 a week and turn it into pretty much anything. The first time Chris met his dad, my husband now, they legally adopted him as their father. They gave him adoption papers on Father's Day when they were 30 and 31. So Chris was 31 and Dot was 30.
That is the sweetest story.
It was really cool. But Michael opens this big box of paper and he goes, "What's this?" And they're like, "It's adoption papers." And he goes, "What are you adopting?" And they're like, "You. We're adopting you, Dad."
Oh, this is so cute.
They called him Dad forever. Mm. Chris gave me away at the wedding and Dot was my maid of honor.
Well, how old were they at the time when you got remarried?
9 and 10.
9 and 10. And then there's a cute story about how they actually, you say they found them for you?
No, but Chris picked him out. So the first time they ever met Michael, I'd been dating him about 6 weeks. I didn't let anybody I was seeing meet my kids, safety.
Absolutely.
So we had gone to a race at the fairgrounds. Brooks and Dunn used to do metal rodeo on Tuesday nights, and it was legends cars. I mean, everything, it's like 8 ways to bacon with him. Everything connected to music somehow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kix literally came back across the track one night to autograph something for Chris and didn't know it till a few years ago when I outed him. He's like, "Really?" And I'm like, "Yeah." Because Kix is the nicest guy ever. Yeah. So we went to the races, and I took a picnic basket. And we're leaving, and Chris thinks Michael's amazing because he knows all about race cars, and he let Chris have the leftover brownies and all this stuff, right? So Chris hangs out the window at the back of my car from the waist up, and he goes, "What are you doing tomorrow night? Aren't you going to kiss her goodnight? You should come over. Mom makes roast on Wednesday nights. Mom will make a roast. She'll make cheese biscuits. Do you like cheese biscuits? And she can make homemade brownies."
He was selling you to this guy.
So Michael looked at me, and he goes, I'd love to come. So he comes over the next night, and he ate every last bite of the roast and vegetables that I had in the crock pot.
And if we get back to you being a single mom and trying to make that food last for the week, it was gone.
I took the leftovers and made it into stew or hash or sub sandwiches or something. Like, I had to have the... I had a sick feeling on my face, and Michael said he looked over and looked at me, and I was just sick. And Chris goes, "Yes, we get peanut butter and jelly the rest of the week." And I'm like... Michael goes, "I could come over tomorrow night and bring pizza." We're like, "We'd love that." So he came over the next night and brought pizza. And then he came over the next night, and I think we had barbecue. And from then on, like,
y'all have just been together ever since.
Pretty much.
Aww, and the 27 kids just years. Fell in love with him immediately. And now he's truly their dad.
Yes.
At what point in the relationship did they start calling him dad?
Probably about a year after we got married. Chris wanted to call him dad immediately. But I said, because I wanted to be respectful to Carter,
right? Too. More of a respect, yeah. But your daughter works with you now, right?
She does. Okay. She's getting ready to leave me and go do something else.
Oh.
She's worked with me for 11 years, but she's finishing up her college degree.
Oh.
And she really didn't ever want to work in the music business. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a good thing for her. So Carter is the youngest, and he and his wife just moved to Denver, but they don't want kids. So I only have one grandchild. My granddaughter, who's 11, and Dot's little girl, and Dot's probably not going to have any more. And I don't know that Chris will ever settle down long enough to have any.
Let's talk about how you got in the music business. So none of these jobs that you've been telling me, you sewed, you did, you worked as an assistant in an office, all of these things. How did that lead to you being one of the top business managers in Nashville?
So I also had worked for accounting people. Mm-hmm. And I had been in human resources before Chris was born. So fast forward, Chris wants to sign a record deal. This guy finds him on the internet. Chris is 15. I let him sign the contract, but I put a time limit on it, 18 months. Come to find out, the guy doesn't know anything about what he's doing. He's a super awesome songwriter, but he just had an investor and doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent $3,000, which doesn't sound like a lot now, but back then it was a lot.
I'm sure.
That I didn't have to go to an attorney to find out that all we had to do was let Chris age out of it. He just couldn't release any music. Well, he aged out of it at 17. In the meantime, I went back to school to get a second degree. I already had a degree in English. Mm-hmm. I wanted to teach college literature when the kids were out of high school.
Okay.
Went back, got a second degree in music business. I was about 6 hours shy of graduating, got offered a job through an internship that I did, and went to work for Smith Wiles.
So you actually got your degree in music business, the second one.
The
okay.
Second one.
Okay. And so you went to work for a different business
I went to work for another business management company. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the second day there, I had to walk in and go, oh, by the way, I have a kid that sings. And he just met one of our clients and he's going to produce some sides on him. So he met Byron Gallimore.
Oh, wow.
And Byron did all of Tim McGraw's stuff.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
So Byron loved his voice. But the problem with it was everybody kept saying, well, he sounds like Randy Travis and he looks like a Backstreet Boy, because he did.
And he could break dance.
And he could break dance, which they didn't even know that.
Right.
So Byron pitched him around town. Chris got frustrated in that time period. Mm. And Byron was like, it's too soon to give up. But Chris wanted to, like, he was young.
Yeah.
And when he got offered the band in Texas, it was like, I'm going to do this.
Yeah. You're just eager. You know, you've got this passion and you want to just get started and do it. You are Chris's business manager, along with, yes. He was not your first client though.
No.
So nope. You ended up leaving that company to start your own venture.
So a lot of people know I'm nicknamed Mama Becky.
Yes.
That didn't come from Chris or Dot. It actually came from Jamie Johnson and Randy Houser and Dallas Davidson and Rob Hatch. Jamie's the one that actually nicknamed me Mama Becky. He goes, you act just like a mama. And I'm like, well, I'm worried about all your stuff. That's probably why. So yeah. They nicknamed me Mama Becky. Fast forward, Chris gets his record deal. He's about a year into it. I decide that I'm leaving there. They had just let Jared Neiman go. And Jared was the first person that ever walked in and said, can I have her as my client manager? Mm-hmm. And so I walked out with him and said, hey, it's November. I'm going to open my own company in January. Do you want me to take your stuff home with me and do it from there? I'd love to have you as my first client. He goes, here you go.
Oh, wow.
Hands me his box of stuff.
So he was the one that kind of said, I'll take that risk. And not that it was a risk. You were good at what you did, but still it was a new venture.
It was a new venture. He had just lost his record deal at the time. He was on Category 5. It shut down. He lost his manager, but he still had his booking agent. Mm-hmm. I had him until about 3 or 4 years ago, I think. Jared left. But, you know, we're still good friends.
Yeah.
He helped me get my start
as
my own place. And originally I was going to take the people that the other companies in Nashville didn't want, like the smaller acts that they didn't need. Mm-hmm. So I left there. Chris came with me after a month. Chris was about to lose his deal. I found out my husband had lung cancer.
Oh, wow.
So I've been in business less than 6 months. We were living off my husband because he was a contractor and it was boom. It was 2008. The day that we found out that they got all his cancer and he was going to be okay was the day Chris's first song went number one.
Oh, wow. The black dress song, getting you home. Oh, my goodness. Wow. So definitely the valleys and the lows, but a lot of highs there as well. And then now you have clients that range from.
So we have Cece Winans.
Oh, she's I adore her.
She's got a ton of Grammys and she's amazing. I have Kane Brown.
Okay.
I have Drew Baldridge.
Yeah.
I still have James Stroud, who was my original client at Smith Wiles. Uh-huh. James ran DreamWorks Records for years. He produced Chris's records.
Yes.
Two of Chris's records. Really good, close family friend. He does not call me Mama Becky. He calls me little sister. But yeah, I have James. I have some more up and coming. Angie Kay, who's one of CMT's Next Women of Country.
Yeah, I think that is.
We have Alexander Kay, who's killing it, was on tour with Tim McGraw last year. Uh-huh. And we have Restless Road.
And for people who are listening that may not understand what a business manager does, I mean, there's all types of management positions in the music industry. For example, there's the manager, there's the tour manager, there's the business manager, there's the production manager. There's all these different people. But the business manager, I guess the easiest way is anything that money touches, you're going to help them with, right?
Yep. Do all their accounting, all their banking. If they buy a house, we usually close on the house. We help them set up the trust. Mm-hmm. We find the financing. Like, they don't do anything.
Pay the bills.
I mean, their taxes, their human resources. So
today, you were working on a license for a golf cart.
Yes,
I mean, you just never know, right?
Because I had to get a license plate for a golf cart.
That's so funny. One of my favorite things about Chris's story, kind of at this stage where we are with new artists, just navigating all of this, learning so much, a lot of great things happening, but also, you know, you worry about this music business and how fickle it is. But one of my favorite parts of Chris's story is that his first three singles, a lot of people may not realize this,
they stalled,
which the goal for people who are just love the mom stories and don't know as much about the music, you know, the goal is to get to number one. And when you enter the charts, which we consider around what, 50 or so, you enter the chart, you want it to climb. And every week that number needs to get higher and higher. But his first three singles did not climb past about 40.
Well, so the two right before the Black Dress song came out died at 37. He hated that number forever.
Oh, wow.
So he said they died at 37 with an anchor.
drop dead weight.
And one of those songs was Voices that he re-released, and it went number one. And Chris and Randy Travis are like the only two people that have ever re-released a song that didn't make it that went number one.
Wow. Yeah, that was probably a big risk to re-release. Did he re-release a different version?
No,
it was the same one. They just put it back out. But right, but after that, he had four number one singles.
Yes.
So that is, I mean, a very rare occurrence in the music business. So it's really awesome that he experienced that. And I guess you guys were just riding high at that time, right?
Thrilled.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, he's had 13 number ones, I think.
Wow. Number 13.
Yeah.
Does he still get as excited this many years in? He's 37. He's been doing this a long time now
People don't realize. Chris literally started singing for money when he was 12 years old. So I thought he would outgrow it and like find the cure for cancer or something. Then once he got into it, it's like, he's really good at locating talent. He's doing some producing on the side at this point.
Really? Does he have an interest in that and finding other talent and maybe him kind of taking that producer role?
He does. So he's been really good about supporting young talent too, and trying to help bring people up behind him and push them in the right direction and tell them, you know, the right things to do. Because even though he's been very successful, we didn't really know the music business. Like a lot of people that get into this have got an in somewhere. That's why I went back to school and went to work for somebody. You've got to know who to trust and who not to trust, because
part of your motivation of seeing what Chris's path and future could possibly be, and you just as a mom wanting to be as informed and helpful and supportive as possible?
Yes, but the first day that I was there, I told you I worked for James Stroud.
Yes.
It was like everything I'd ever done that I liked in every career path I had ever had, from mothering people to looking and helping them with their money to making a dollar stretch into five, to making sure that all the liabilities were covered and that contracts were good, like everything that I'd ever liked about every job, any job that I'd ever had, that's what business management is.
It kind of rolled all into that. Yeah. Yeah. So you had more experience than you realized just from life.
I thought I was going to be there 6 months and I ended up being there for years and then
still
doing it. So yeah, I've been in this business for over 25 years at this point.
Still doing it. What's been one of your favorite moments to be a part of with Chris as a performer?
When they told him he was invited to be an Opry member.
There's nothing more special than that.
We managed to keep it a secret. I'm not good at keeping secrets from him.
So you knew?
I knew.
Okay.
Larry Fitzgerald, who was managing Chris at the time and retired. We love you, Larry. And we miss you every day. So Larry Fitzgerald and Bill Simmons were partners.
Yep.
And they were managing Chris. And Larry called me and goes, "You absolutely cannot tell this." And I'm like, "Larry, you know I'm not good at secrets." He goes, "You cannot tell." I said, "Okay." He goes, "They're going to invite him to be an Opry member on this date." And I said, "Okay, you have to let me have my mom and dad there. I'll sneak them in. We'll hide them someplace. But they have to be there."
Yeah.
So we did. Chris had no idea they were there. None.
Wow. That's not an easy task. It's a pretty nice backstage, but still to hide somebody, you probably got their own room or something to put them in, right?
Well, we just had to keep moving them around.
So okay.
Until he was on stage and they had Vince come invite him because,
Look at that. Back to Starwood Amphitheater. You on a date with your head. I mean, think about that. Amazing.
Chris was just floored and everybody kind of walked out. This was when you could still, this is pre-COVID, you could still sit on the stage. So I just brought him around the curtain on the side and he looked up and saw everybody standing there.
I bet you go right back to that moment. That was emotional. Yeah.
Very.
Yeah.
Because I worked at Opryland.
Oh, you did?
And the last year that I worked there, I was in hospitality, which meant you worked in the front of the park and you walked around and did interviews during the day, but we would have to stay out front until the Opry let out at night.
Okay.
In case somebody got lost and needed like help finding a park ranger or any of that stuff. And so I used to volunteer to work the Opry. And we'd have to go backstage at the Opry to get a snack when we took our break because nothing else in the park was open.
Okay. Oh, wow. So you go way back to the Opry.
Way back.
Yeah. That's so special. And I guess even now when you think about his accolades and things he's accomplished or achieved, that one's probably way right at the top.
For me, it is. I mean, he's been nominated for Grammys. He's been nominated for ACMs, CMAs, all that stuff. But the part where he got to be an Opry member, that's huge for me.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that's super interesting about you is now, I mean, you're still running this business. That's obviously your full-time career, but you've got all these fun things on the side. I mean, you brought me homemade bread today and cookbooks. Tell me how the cookbook thing came to be.
So during COVID, I was about to lose my mind. And I'd always said I was going to write a cookbook because I told you I had to learn how to cook out of necessity.
Yeah.
But as Chris and Dot have grown up, their friends would ask me for recipes for stuff. And some of it was like simple stuff, like how do you make a roast in a crock pot? How do you do this? Mm-hmm. How do you take a box of cake mix and make it taste like a bakery cake? Because there's ways to do that.
Yeah.
And it's pretty easy.
Yeah.
So I started writing this down. And the first volume that came out at the end of 21, this is volume one, mm-hmm. actually has a forward in there that explains, you know, I had to stretch my dollars when my kids were growing up. So some of those are like my favorite recipes. Well, during the course of writing this down, Chris and I started talking. After Chris got through all of anything you could ever watch on the bus, and they all watch TV because there's nothing else to do.
Yeah.
He started watching cooking shows. And Chris is a little bit of a gourmet cook.
Really?
Like, he's really good.
Okay.
So he's got a few recipes in there. And he's come and been on my cooking lives. I've got a Facebook and I'll do a live show every other week or so. And now I've got TikTok going.
Oh,
so
look at you.
It's We Are Cooking Now.
Okay, that's the TikTok. We Are Cooking Now.
That's my Facebook and my Instagram.
And then you have to tell me before you go about this ballroom dancing. I mean, you are now a competitive ballroom dancer. How did that come to be?
I'm actually a national champion.
Oh, my goodness.
So I started, Safe Haven does a Dancing with the Stars every year where they raise money for Safe Haven. Safe mm-hmm. Haven is our only family shelter in Nashville that takes the whole family. And they have like an 85% success rate. Those people never end up homeless. They help them get a job. Mm-hmm. They help them get training to get a job. They help them get insurance. They get affordable housing. And then they wean them off support within a year. It's an amazing, amazing organization. It's safehaven.org if anybody wants to look it up.
Okay.
I danced as the celebrity dancer and we won audience favorite. And then from there, I started competing and I competed.
Had you ever danced before? Like, I mean.
No, I roller skated competition in college.
Oh, you did? Oh, that's fun.
So I could do everything you could do on ice skates, on roller skates. I could do an axel. I could do a sit spin.
Oh, amazing.
Started dancing. And then last year I won the Female Dancers Cup title.
Really? So there's different tours. So do you travel doing this?
Yes.
Okay. So everywhere.
All over the country.
Oh my goodness. So how often would you say you compete? Like, when's your next one?
I go to New Orleans in a couple of weeks. Okay. I compete about once a month.
As a matter of fact, our email correspondence, you know, back and forth when we were trying to find a date and time, and you were like, well, this works, but I'll be traveling for a ballroom competition. I was like, wait a minute, this is so cool. What do you do? I love how you saying yes and taking a risk to something you were asked to do for charity has now led to kind of a next fun thing for you. You know, at this stage, you don't have kids in the house anymore. We're all looking for, okay, what are we going to do next? And yours is pretty awesome.
I didn't tell my clients at all for a minute. And then people started to find out, and Kane Brown, I love him, looked at me, goes, that's sick. Like, which apparently means awesome.
Yeah, apparently it's a good thing, right? Yeah. Oh my goodness, I love him. That's so fun. Well, what would you say that Chris Young got from his mama?
Well, I'm absolutely terrified to stand in front of a crowd, so not that. I have a genius IQ also. I think he got that from me.
Really?
And his ability to cook. I'll take credit for that, even though I didn't teach him.
Okay. Y'all kind of had that passion together, though.
We do.
Yeah.
And he has done things by trial and error. Like, he makes an amazing rib rub, like out of this world amazing from scratch rib rub.
Have you thought about, as his business manager, getting him to package it up and sell it?
We've talked about it.
Okay.
And we've talked about an actual cook, like a real cooking show.
Oh,
like
okay.
An actual cooking show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where we cook together.
Oh, that's fun. That would be a neat thing to do together.
I mean, I got to get him off the road long enough to do it. And then he has his podcast, The Quad with Chris Young.
Yeah. That's so neat.
You need to come and be on his podcast.
Well, you tell him to invite me and I will come and be on it. Well, congrats on all the success. And I think it's really, really neat how you've been such a key part of his success and what he's done. But then you've been able to use everything that you've learned in this business now to help so many clients in music and people that we enjoy being fans of and listen to. So that's pretty awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. Hey, did you know that we have Got It From My Mama merchandise over on the website? Visit gotitfrommymamapodcast.com to see the hoodies, mugs, thermals. Also, if you have an app that you're listening on and it allows you to write a review, we would so appreciate it. I want to share with you a miracle skincare product that works overnight. Just kidding. If anyone says that to you, run. Skincare takes time and consistency. However, let me tell you about Bareface Toning Pads. They don't work overnight, but you can start seeing results as soon as 2 weeks after using them. Okay, so who needs them? Everyone. They're skin smoothing pads that help prevent breakouts, remove dull, dead skin, and improve the absorption of your skincare products. Basically, they reveal a more even, healthy glow with every swipe. They're Bareface's best-selling products with over 2,000 five-star reviews and over 200,000 units sold just in 2022. So a fan favorite to say the least. They literally could not keep these toning pads in stock for the first 2 years after they launched. So if you are looking for an easy first product to get started with, this is a must-have in your routine. Don't forget, you can use the code MAMA15 to get 15% off your first Bareface purchase.